Welcome to our first episode of Living Downstream, an environmental education program hosted by Umpqua Watersheds. My name is Ryan, and I am an AmeriCorps member serving in the role of environmental education and outreach leader for the organization. I want to start this show, and all episodes of this show, by recognizing that the land upon which Umpqua Watersheds is located was historically occupied by various indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquel, and Malala, among others. This episode focuses on trail hiking and will include interviews of two local residents and avid hikers, Diana Pace and Connie Page. Hello, I'm here with Diana Pace, who's going to talk with us a little about her interesting hiking experience. Can you describe for our listeners a little about your experience with hiking? So is this like something you started out as a hobby or for your job?
Well, I started out hiking when I was 11 years old, so obviously it was a hobby. And I would just wander off into the woodland at the end of the housing development. And that was in the age of free-range children, when you were allowed to wander off for the day. And I would learn plant identification, observe wildlife, look for fossils in the stream bed, and just generally have a good time. The first big hike I did was at Rocky Mountain National Park when I was 23 and on my way to Oregon, and it was the first mountains I'd seen and been in. Also, once I had kids, I took them hiking from the time they were toddlers. They actually grew up backpacking at Twin Lakes. I did decades of backpacking on the Pacific Crest Trail and in Oregon wildernesses. Now I hike 6 to 8 miles on day hikes. I used to be able to hike 12 miles average easily. You know, I just continue hiking. I'll hike as long as I can. I'm 73 now, so...
Keeps you young.
Yeah, it does.
Very cool. Can you talk a little about some of your favorite hikes in the area?
Definitely. In the North Umpqua and Diamond Lake Ranger Districts, there is the North Umpqua Trail and our wonderful waterfall hikes. There's Tipsu Peak, that's a favorite, and Mount Bailey and Mount Thielson, which are a little more... You know, take a little...
Rigorous or something.
Yeah, rigorous, thank you. And then also a popular one is the Boulder Creek Wilderness. In the South Umpqua, very popular, Cliff and Buckeye Lakes, the Skimmerhorn, and Rattlesnake Mountain. There are pamphlets available on the North Umpqua Trail and the Thundering Waterfalls, and those are available from the Forest Service and at the Visitor Center downtown. You know, you want a good guide when you're out there. And then also, I like to call before I go to check on the status of that trail. They'll get information for you, you know, whether, hey, there's too many trees down, or that's closed due to the fire, or there's a bridge out, whatever, or no, hey, it's good to go. I prefer for people to be prepared and educated, you know, when they go out into the forest or the wilderness. And the other tip is, please respect it, you know, leave no trace and all that. I was talking to you about my favorite Oregon hikes in general. Three Sisters Wilderness, the Mount Jefferson Wilderness, the Mount Hood Wilderness, the Diamond Peak and Mount Thielson Wildernesses, and the Eagle Cap Wilderness are all fabulous places to go hiking.
Are these all day hikes or longer trails that you do part of or backpacking?
Most of them I did as backpacks, except Mount Thielson Wilderness you can do Tipsy Peak as a day hike.
Okay.
And in the Diamond Peak Wilderness, it's a long drive, but if you drive to Summit Lake, where the PCT crosses, you can day hike from there.
How about any accessible hikes? Are there good hikes you'd recommend, either for people in a wheelchair or maybe families with young children?
Yeah. For disabled access, there's Gaddis Park, which is along the Umpqua River in Roseburg.
Okay.
And there's Eastwood Park on Deer Creek in Roseburg. Clearwater Falls up the North Umpqua, Susan Creek Falls, which is currently not open due to the fires, but that was a famous, you know, well-known handicap accessible. And on the North Umpqua Trail, the Swiftwater section, which is the beginning of the North Umpqua Trail, the first half mile was very handicap accessible. but that's now closed due to the fires.
Okay.
So, also, good one is the Diamond Lake Trail along the campground. Mm-hmm. It's actually paved.
Oh, okay.
So you can go along the lake there. Well, I'd like to go over some family-friendly Umpqua National Forest hikes so that people with young children can find places to enjoy nature.
Yeah.
In the North Umpqua Ranger District, there is Steamboat Falls, which is rated easy.
Okay.
Susan Creek and Fall Creek Falls were very popular. My kids grew up hiking in there, but they're both closed due to the fire.
Gotcha.
Bull Pup Lake up Steamboat area is also a good place for taking children. Also up in the North Umpqua District, up Little River, very popular sites for families, the Wolf Creek Falls and Yaksu Falls. So basically, you know, they're rated easy, they're short and very, very enjoyable, lots to see. In the Diamond Lake District, Tokatee Falls, very popular. It's only 1 mile round trip.
Okay.
Watson Falls is gorgeous. It's one of the biggest water, you know, tallest waterfalls in Oregon. And then Clearwater Falls, which is a very short hike. But really, you could do all three of those in one day. They're in the same vicinity, you know, if you wanted to have an outing.
Gotcha.
In the Tiller Ranger District, which is the South Umpqua River, there's South Umpqua Falls, which is very popular. And then off it, often in that vicinity is the Maranatha Trail, which is a good children's nature trail.
Oh, cool.
And also there's Cliff and Buckeye Lakes, which are a popular place to take kids, do a little fishing with them. It's good fishing there. And then another trail, which is not too long. It's only 1 mile round trip. It's got to drive up, you know, dirt roads to get there. And it's in the Rogue Umpqua Divide Wilderness. So you actually go there from Union Creek. But it's called Rabbit Ears. And they're like extinct volcano plugs that happen to be, you know, the way they stick up together.
Yeah.
They look like rabbits. That would be a fun place to take kids because it's not a long, hard hike.
Yeah. It's great to think about helping kids get outside, because I know that a lot of parents, you know, as the kids are semi going back to school or having a virtual mix of schooling, it's just, there's still a lot of energy there. And I think the kids, just even when they're not having the COVID challenges, like getting kids outside and immersed in nature is such a great experience for them, and they can learn a lot and observe a lot. So thank you for sharing those short hikes so we can think about, okay, you know, if I have a little kid, they might not want to be on the trail a super long time. So having a 1 miler is probably a good length. Yeah, just I drove by an area and just horrible to see and to know that people lost both property and life, and tough, I think, on everyone. And yeah, including hikers who want to go hiking. And hopefully we can get out and, you know, replant and reforest and kind of reestablish some of those trails in the coming years.
Definitely. 5 sections of the North Umpqua Trail were affected by this fire and are closed. And that's a big deal. Because usually when there's a fire up there, maybe one section will get affected and closed. But to have that much affected, I mean, that's how big the fire was. The beauty of that area is so changed now. But, you know, like they say, it'll grow back and the wildlife will come back. Just take time.
Well, I guess, yeah, speaking of fires, how have trails been impacted by climate change or other human activities?
Well, for one thing, we've experienced trail closures due to nearby fires even, or too much smoke, and even had to cancel camp trips, you know, besides hiking trips, camping trips, because of things being closed due to smoke. Of course, we've had the hotter, drier summers with more fire and more smoke. And recreation sites are affected more with closures, as I was saying. And also, we seem to hike through burns more. And I know it's part of nature that the places in the forest burn, and it's healthy for the forest. Hopefully, we can minimize climate change to the point where the fires are, you know, not as hot and devastating.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like the impact has been making them burn like hotter, faster, or longer, or something, you know, just kind of magnifying some of the things that were already happening and just making them worse, it seems like.
And, you know, when I was up the Umpqua, the Mount Thielson fire, which was like 9,900 acres, it was a much more normal looking fire.
Oh, okay.
It was, you know, where you had patches of green and, you know, and not just sheer like utter devastation along the way, even though it did jump the highway. But you could see it was a more normal-looking fire there as a comparison.
Is that like a higher elevation area?
And it is. It's 5,000 feet up there.
Okay. Do you have any upcoming hikes planned that interested listeners could participate in?
I have none scheduled at the moment. A few of us are talking about going back to the Rogue River and doing another section. But with COVID precautions, this really had effects on us because both Umpqua Watersheds and the hiking club hikes are not open to the public at this time. So but open to members only. Sizes limit to 10 with pre-registration, no carpooling except family members, and distancing at the trailhead and on the trails. So
people can go on their own, yeah, just not like with an organized big group. Makes sense.
Yeah. They can.
You're listening to an episode of Living Downstream on KQUA, brought to you by Umpqua Watersheds.
Do you have a young child you're thinking about taking along on a hike? Here are a few things to keep in mind, based on recommendations from the American Hiking Society and REI. Food. You'll want to take snacks that they can easily eat on the path, rather than wet or messy foods. And try to take a variety, maybe some fruit, nuts, chocolate, etc. Water. Make sure you have enough water for each child as well. If they're old enough and can carry their own, that's ideal. Remind them to sip periodically. A pack. Depending on how long of a hike you're doing, perhaps they could just carry a water bottle sling or a full hiking or backpacking or day pack. What's the weather like? It's good to wear layers that can be removed or added as you get sweaty or cool off when you stop for a break or the weather turns. And sturdy hiking boots or other sturdy shoes are helpful as well. As with a trip to an unfamiliar place or a large busy place like the mall, it would be good to talk with your kids about what to do if they get separated from you. Instruct them that if they look around and don't see you, they should stay put and blow a whistle 3 times. Be sure to pack the whistle. You could attach a whistle to each child's coat or bag. Think about how much your child can handle. If your 5-year-old has never been on a hike before, it's probably a bit much to start her or him on a difficult 10-mile hike. Start small and start local. Find a fairly short, interesting hike nearby and start with that. While you're out, allow some flexibility for your child to explore and observe. You want to make sure the experience is a fun one for your children, so they want to go back and do it again. If you're hiking with very young children, REI has some additional tips for hiking with infants and toddlers. I'll share a link to this in the resource section. Engage your kids. You could do this by encouraging them to use their senses, to notice what they see, smell, and hear. Perhaps you could do a scavenger hunt, inviting your child to use their observation skills to locate specific native birds, plants, or tracks and other signs of wildlife. You could all carry gloves and a trash bag to pick up litter when you find it. Perhaps you know some tree, plant, or bird species and want to teach your child how to identify them as well. Geocaching is also a fun way to get outside and use technology such as GPS or compass and maps. Hiking with kids can be both fun and a great learning opportunity. And it's never too early to start. Going to pause during this portion of the show to share what other AmeriCorps members are doing in Douglas County. For this AmeriCorps Minute, we'll hear from 2 AmeriCorps members who are organizing a diversity celebration this month.
Hi everyone, my name is Cherish Wunser and I am an AmeriCorps member serving as the Community Nutrition Educator at UC Veg.
And I am Nico Padgett. I am serving as the Health Educator with Blue Zones Project Umpqua. We were hoping to take a couple minutes today to talk to everyone about an event we have coming up called Celebrating Diversity in Douglas County. This is a virtual culture fair that we're going to be holding on Sunday, January 17th from 1 to 5 p.m. in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is the following day. The main purpose of this event is to celebrate the diversity that we do have here in Douglas County and hopefully find a way to learn and grow together as a community and really just learn to understand each other and develop a stronger community bond.
There are a couple of ways that community members can participate in this event. The first is you can join as an audience member, or you can submit a 2 to 3 meetings video just sharing some aspect of your cultural identity. Third way to be involved is to serve on a panel. As a member of the panel, you will have 10 to 15 minutes to once again present on some aspect of your culture. After that time has passed, we will take a couple of questions from the audience members. If you're interested in being a part of this event, please send an email to ucvegamericorps@gmail.com. Again, that's ucvegamericorps@gmail.com, and you can get more information from me about this event. Thank you.
Are you an avid reader? Then you should join Umpqua Watershed's book club. Turning Over a New Leaf is a book club for teens and adults who want to learn about and discuss environmental issues and try to make positive change. Umpqua Watersheds has a number of opportunities for the youths in your life. Changemakers is a club for 9 to 12-year-olds who want to change the world. We'll meet on Sundays at 5 p.m. Pacific Time starting January 17th. Do you have a high schooler who loves music, writing, or theater? We're starting a radio club for youths ages 13 to 18 to develop their own radio show. Additionally, we're lending science equipment to local homeschooling and non-homeschooling families as part of our Home Explorer program. If you'd be interested in borrowing a water quality monitoring test kit, microscope, or snap circuits kit, let us know. Email our AmeriCorps member and environmental education and outreach leader at ryan@umpquawatersheds.org or check out our website or Facebook page for more information. I'm here today with Connie Page. I met Connie on a recent hike organized by Umpqua Watersheds, and we had a lovely conversation. It's great to have you on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for asking me.
I believe you've been involved with Umpqua Watersheds for a few years. Can you talk about your experience with the organization and share a little about some of the work that they're doing now to protect wild lands in Oregon?
And I'm on the Crater Lake Wilderness Committee. So what we are working on is protecting Crater Lake from more development and making sure that there's a corridor for wildlife to move around in and live in and, you know, be productive in. And we're trying to protect, there's 5 watersheds, of course, that come out of the Crater Lake area. And that's what we're focusing on. I mean, we need that clean water. Every community needs clean water, and along with our fish and our wildlife. So that's kind of what we're working on, trying to keep those 5 watersheds safe and clean and protected.
Yeah, and corridors are so important. I hate seeing, you know, dead animals on the side of the road when we could do something to make it easier for them to cross. You know, we're bisecting their home, really. So if we could limit those bisections and also, yeah, create ways for them to pass through safely, that would make so much more sense. You know, we're other living beings just like they are, so they have a right to be there too.
Yeah. And with the fires and stuff, you just think, we just keep, their area just keeps getting smaller and smaller, and then we're mad when they show up in town or in our yards and eat stuff, and I just wish we could give them more wilderness than we do now.
Yeah, me too.
They are as important as we are. We're all a circle of life. I mean, we don't have them, we're not going to be here long either.
Yeah, there's so many things too that we just don't understand about other living beings, you know, how they communicate, or, you know, even with trees, like the way that trees pass nutrients to other trees. You know, so many things are so new that we just, yeah, if we eliminate different species, that's just a whole, you know, section of knowledge we're just dismissing. So
did you read The Secret Life of Trees?
I haven't, but I had learned that previously, so I'm hoping to read that soon.
Yeah, okay, and that was so interesting how trees communicate. But, you know, when I'm out hiking, not frequently, but often, I guess I would say. I see trees that have been cut down and the tree next to it will give it the nutrients it needs to maybe regrow. So you'll see the top that has been cut, but it's regrowing. Huh. And it's not regrowing as a tree, but it's regrowing as a stump, kind of.
Yeah.
Or you see the sister trees where one tree grows on top of another tree that's already been fallen. They support each other. And even when they're dead, they support so much wildlife, and then they give back to the soil. We have to stop looking at them like a commodity and start looking at them like a community, because that's what they are.
I love that. So you mentioned hiking. Where and when do you hike and why? I guess, yeah, why, when, where?
Yeah, well, so my father, who was not very emotionally attainable, was very, really loved walking. And so our whole family are hikers. And in fact, starting in Minnesota, we got so that people wouldn't even go on hikes with us anymore, because we're always bushwhacking and going places that maybe we weren't supposed to go, or there wasn't a trail. So then when I moved to Alaska, oh my gosh, the hiking was incredible. And Rick was a pilot, so we had a float plane, so we could get out to these amazing wilderness places. You know, you could be on the Brooks Range, you could be anywhere, and I got to do some amazing hikes in Alaska. We became friends with some guides up there, and they would need help once in a while, and I was always a willing helper, so then I'd get to go along. You know, bear encounters and caribou, you'd watch herds of caribou go by. So Alaska hiking was amazing. That's a non-replaceable experience. I don't know if I'll ever have anything quite like that again. Even where we lived, I could leave our back door and hike up a hill and walk for hours into places that, I mean, there would be other people there. It was a trail, but moose would cross my path fairly regularly. You would see bear scat frequently. One year we had, I don't know what the deal was, but the bees, I guess it's hornets that live in the ground. They're all over the place out in the woods, but I didn't realize that. And a bear or several bears, maybe it was a low food year or something, but they were digging up all these ground hornets' nests.
Oh.
Everywhere I hiked, you would see these diggings, and then you'd look, and it was a hornet's nest. So, I mean, I love hiking because you just find amazing. I love looking at the banana slugs when they come by, you know, when you run into one. The lizards around here are amazing. So then we get to Oregon. This place is just an incredible place to hike to. The wilderness is not quite the same because you frequently, you know, there's roads everywhere, but you can get to some pretty remote places. And my husband likes to hike too. So we have been to some very remote places here. My idea of hiking is to just totally immerse yourself in the, I don't go for speed, or I'm not trying to impress anyone. I just want the feeling of being out there with this tree community and the wildness and the way it used to be and the way it could be again. I love watching the birds, the spring flowers. There's just, if you're willing to take the time to look and be present while you're hiking, and are aware of every second you're out there instead of racing to get somewhere, I think that is how I survive in a kind of a tumultuous world, I think, is just finding myself back there in the woods.
Yeah, I feel like there's so much to see if our eyes are open to seeing it. You know, they're like, you were mentioning, if we really try to look and we observe, there's a lot to observe, you know, there's a lot there. And yeah, if we can go out and kind of separate ourselves. Yeah, I've had many times where if I'm just inside working on stuff the whole day, it gets pretty tiring and my eyes get sore. You know, I'm just looking at the screen and so much is on Zoom now. But yeah, like to be able to be outside and really immerse yourself, there's so many cool and just like wonderful things that you can see, awe-inspiring things. And hiking is a great way to do that.
And I like that you said just being outside, because you don't have to hike to do that either. That's true. I can get lost in my garden, which is not a huge garden, but I'll hear the skittering of a lizard. So then I go over there and watch the lizards for a little while, or the turkeys come by and they're having a dust up, you know. So I'll watch them for a while, and the bees and the those little yellow spiders, and I'm not sure what they're called, but they're always catching bees off flowers, and there's so much life out there to watch. And the frogs are all over in the garden. I mean, I can really, I'm easily entertained. I can be out in my garden for hours and not really get much done. So you don't have to hike. Go out in your own yard. Look at what is there. You know, take the time. But okay, I'm going to talk a little bit more about hiking. We try to do a hike fairly frequently, like, you know, every few weeks. And all this summer, I was training for a hike. We were going to do it down in California in the Sequoia National Park. I guess we were going to be in the Inyo National Park. It was going to be a week-long hike, and we drove all the way down there and got evacuated from the campground were staying before we left. So then we had spent the whole summer training, so we'd been on lots of very cool hikes around here. The Boundary Waters, I think there's a border hike up 138, Rattlesnake Mountain, Quartz Mountain. There's just, you know, a plethora of amazing hikes around here if you get a book or look it up on your computer, I guess. But anyway, so we trained all summer, got evacuated from that hike. And that was down by Bishop, California. And then we came home, and the woman we were going to hike with just had ants in her pants. So even though it was all smoke and fire up here, she said, let's go to Nevada and hike the Ruby Mountains. You know, we're all altitude trained. Let's go for it. So like nuts, even though we were on evacuation 3 at our house here, we live out near Glide, we took off for Nevada and went for what was supposed to be a 5-day hike in the Ruby Mountains.
Sounds like you like adventuring too a bit, you know, going on longer hikes. That's cool.
Well, that's what I was going to say too. Not many people will hike with us anymore here either, because we never can just say, well, okay, we're just going to walk to that next corner and then we'll turn around. Let's just go to the next corner, because both of us say that. We're both very similar hikers, and we'll get to the next corner, and these people, you know, the people we're hiking with are like, okay, let's
turn around. Yes.
And Rick and I are, okay, you guys go ahead and turn around. We're just going to go to the next corner. And we end up going 10 miles when we said we'd go 5. And so therefore not many people hike with us anymore. But I just love going beyond the point of where you thought you were going to go and exploring new things. I was going to say the other hike we did this summer was Wild Rose Point in Ilahi Tower. And I don't know if the fire got up there, but I just think that is a gorgeous hike also.
I'm still getting to know some of the different great hikes, and I've had a few other speakers that I've interviewed who have talked about some of the different hikes, and so I'm trying to take a note of some of those different places and start scheduling trips to go there.
Yeah, well, even just all the waterfalls up 138, I mean, some of them are right there, but some of them you get an hour or two hike. So the Lamolo hike going in the back way is really a pretty hike. You can go two different ways, but the back way and the longest way is really a beautiful hike. And the other hike that's really an adventure is Dread and Terror.
I've heard of that one.
Well, we did that like last spring, I think. And all those trees were down from Snowmageddon. I mean, it was actually a scary hike, because there were times you had to crawl under trees that were right on very steep slopes and over trees, and there were lots of, you know, where the dirt had just come down. So that was a grand adventure. It's always fun to just have a little bit of fear in there, but a little bit of unsure of how it's gonna end up.
Yeah, I was thinking, you've mentioned some different hikes. Are there any other interesting adventures or maybe some harrowing experiences that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, I'm 66, so I've got a million harrowing experiences I can talk about, because there's a great grizzly story up on the Gulkan in Alaska. But the most recent one was those Ruby Mountains, because we had trained for altitude. We hiked over 10,000 feet multiple times so that we'd be prepared. We'd gone to the doctor, got medicine. You know, you can take some kind of pill and it will help you with your altitude sickness. But we started out on that hike, which was an absolutely gorgeous hike. We were probably 3.5 days in. We'd spent a camp. We had camped one night on this creek, and Peruvian sheep herders had their sheep herd there. So we were surrounded by sheep and sheep poop, of course. And these Peruvian guys were on horseback and they had like the Peruvian blankets, you know, I mean, the blanket That's rolls. Cool. It was just like being in an old movie. I mean, it really was. And that this is part of the magic of hiking. You never know what you're going to run into. It's always an adventure. So anyway, that was such an amazing thing for me to spend the night surrounded by these sheep. And they had sheep dogs, and you know, so there was dogs running, you know, a few dogs running amok. And anyway, so then we hiked a couple more days, and they're all beautiful. I mean, you're hiking through birch trees and aspen, and then you're getting up higher, and of course you're beyond the trees. And we came across just this glorious lake, and there's other people, of course. You see other people every once in a while, but anyway, absolutely beautiful. And halfway through the third day, we were climbing 2,500 feet in one day, and my body started feeling pretty darn bad, and I was slowing down and I was stumbling a little bit. And we stopped for lunch, and both my husband and Jenna, our hiking partner, realized I wasn't doing very well, and we laid down for lunch, and I actually started throwing up. And I could hardly stand back up. But they were both very helpful, and they divided my pack into two. And we hadn't taken the drugs because we're both, you know, we're all like, we don't need those drugs. We've been above 10,000. So that night, we actually hiked up as far as we could, and we were supposed to go farther, but I couldn't walk any farther. So they made camp, and we slept. And what we should have done, this is a warning for anybody listening, what we should have done is walked back down to a better altitude so that my body could readjust. But we didn't do that. We only had a certain amount of days. So we camped actually at a very high, on a very high spot. And so the next day when we got up, they had divided up my pack. So they were carrying much more than I was at that point. And I got up and could hardly walk. I mean, part way down this meadow, I was able to walk. And then I laid down and I said, you guys, I don't think I can get back up. And then I was almost unconscious. And I can remember hearing my friend had an InReach.
Is that one of those like beacons? The local?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like a spot. You know, a spot is something you can use as an emergency locator too. A lot of, we use that up in Alaska. But she had an InReach, and you can actually send, I think, text messages out, and you can call. And I remember them saying, as I'm partially unconscious on the ground, they had wrapped me in, you know, stuff to keep me warm. And I remember Rick saying to Jenna, at what point do you think we need to make this call? And she said, right now. And so the next thing I remember is there was a helicopter hovering around, and it was very interesting because they took a long time to land. And we were wondering what the heck they were doing. I was wondering that myself, even in my subconscious, you know, my unconscious state. And they finally landed and came up and immediately started giving me liquids, and a very nice crew out of Elko, Nevada. But they couldn't take anybody else. They could only take me. We had my dog and of course my husband and Jenna, and thankfully they're very good friends. So that wasn't a bad deal, but I had to get on this helicopter and fly off the mountain and be taken to the hospital. And I'm like, what? I hiked forever. So anyway, they finished out the hike. It was another, you know, they probably had to walk another 15 miles, and they came out the next day, and then were able to come into Elko. But it was a horrible situation because I don't like to not finish things that I start.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a sense of pride. And it was a terrible experience. I mean, your body just kind of starts shutting down. Anyway, so just a warning there. Yeah, we had gone to our doctor and got pills. We could have done them, and it would have probably at least alleviated some of it, or maybe made us smarter in some way. I don't know. But they said the rest of the hike was beautiful. So I'm still saying it's a good hike. They actually had to stash my backpack up at the top, though. And Jenna's daughter and her husband hiked back in to get it, because they had come down at the other end of the trail. They were going to hike in the other direction. So it was a mess, kind of. I wouldn't have missed it, because still, I would have wanted to do it.
Yeah. Was it just because there's, like, the thin air up there? Is that, like, what the problem was?
Well, it affects people differently, because they said people that have done multiple hikes, like famous hikers, they will hike all over the place, and then just one time it might hit them. But I don't know what it does. It's the thin air. You can't quite get as much oxygen as your body needs. And mine was affected. I don't know why, but mine was affected, unlike the other two who just charged on. I mean, they didn't really feel the effects at all. So it's very random. Wow. You know, I've never had that issue before. So
I'm glad you ended up making it out okay, even if it was not the most fun way of getting out.
It wasn't the most fun way of getting out, though they were very, very nice emergency rescue personnel.
What would you tell maybe a first-time hiker or someone who might be interested in going on outdoor adventures, might be new to it, maybe thinking about taking a smaller type of adventure?
Well, I guess I'd say think about where you are, you know, because sometimes if you're in Alaska, you have to think about mosquitoes and gnats and black flies and bears, you know, so you've got a whole different thing you have to think about, how much tundra you're hiking through, because that's so much harder to hike through. And the rivers are colder. So if you're there, you think about something different. If you're Minnesota, it's pretty tame. So you're not having to think about quite so much, except for nettles, maybe, and mosquitoes. But here, I guess if you're hiking in this area, I would say bring more water than you think you need. I mean, it depends. Everybody drinks a different amount of water. Like some people can go almost all day without drinking. I drink vast sums of water. I mean, I always bring as much water as I can carry comfortably. And you know what? I never bring an emergency kit, but a lot of times I'm hiking with people that have them, and that's stupid of me. Because I should, but it's almost like I'm tempting fate, you know, because you do end up with blisters and that can make your hike miserable or whatever. I would think about bear spray, even in these hills. I mean, we don't usually take bear spray, but we had to drag a young bear off 138 just this fall that somebody had hit. You know, those trucks drive so fast. But somebody had hit this young bear and left it on the highway. I mean, it would have been an accident. It was an accident waiting to happen. Plus, it was a life that had been taken. And then to leave it on the road to be run over again and again was just beyond what I could imagine. So anyway, my husband and I pulled it off the road. I got to tell you, it was almost a spiritual experience to take that young body off the road and to be holding those paws, you know, when we drug it off the road. Well, I'm always apologizing to wildlife anyway, but I mean, it was a moment where I was just like, I am so sorry that we as humans are so willing to sacrifice you guys for the slightest reason. I mean, you can't drive a little slower on a road that has wildlife. But anyway, yeah, we do have bears up there. And we actually, up by Tokati, we saw, this is two bears we've seen this year. On Tokati, we were driving on the road to go for a hike. And we saw a bear come racing down the hill and across the road. We got to watch him. He was big, a big black bear. Came down the hill, ran across the road, and we got to watch him. And he was actually headed toward the way we were hiking. And we're both like, wow, maybe we should be bringing bear spray. Anyway, so we never do bring bear spray up there. I'm sure they're more afraid here in Oregon. They're probably way more afraid of us than we are of them. Good shoes. Oh my God, that's a huge must. I always hike in pants that I can take the bottoms off of, you know, the pants that zip off. Yeah. Because sometimes it's just so fun to have the sun on your legs. A good hat that's comfortable and covers your eyes and sunglasses. And golly, I mean, I always carry some kind of chapstick too. And you want plenty of treats, you know, even if you don't think you're going to be eating or going that far. If you're anything like Rick and I are, we always go way beyond where we thought we were going to go. So I have gone on hikes. We have gone on hikes, and he can go forever without eating. I need to eat. So know your own body, you know what the weather's going to be, so you're prepared for that. Have the right amount of water, and bring something to take photos. And then just remember, you're there to appreciate the place. So we always actually take a garbage bag too. And as a thank you to Mother Earth, we usually pick up either the entrance to the hike, you know, because other people usually have parked there and a lot of people don't think to pick up their trash. Or we'll take the bag. I always have a garbage bag in my backpack. And then if we see a place that's been trashed or see trash along the trail, we can pick it up. And it's just a nice thing to do for the gift of being able to be in that wilderness or to be in that forest. you should always think about giving back in a positive way.
Yeah, I love that idea of reciprocity. I feel like so often as a species, we think about what we can take, you know, and I mean, we can get a lot, give back or preserve and yeah, figure out how we can, I don't know, try to commemorate or celebrate the things that we are able to enjoy. It can be so, litter can be so harmful to wildlife. And plus it just, you know, some of those things don't decompose for a long time or they release certain chemicals in the environment. So do you have any good hiking tunes or any music you think about or listen to while hiking?
Okay, so that is kind of the odd thing about me. I noticed that is the odd thing about me. I never listen to anything when I hike because I want to hear every noise. I want to hear all the birds. I want to hear the squirrels in the trees. I want to hear the crackling behind me that says things are out there watching me that I can't see. And so there's magic going on in those woods around me. I'm like that at home too. I want my own thoughts. I find myself very interesting. So I really don't listen to a lot of music. And when I'm outside, I want to hear those things that are around me. I want to hear the leaves crunching beneath my feet. I want the total experience. And if I have music, I listen to it intently. I could never study in school with music. My brother always had music on. I could never study with music on. Because I listen to the words. I want to know the meaning. I want to know what the person that wrote that song was saying. So I could never do anything else but listen to music when I was listening to music. And it's the same thing when I'm out in the woods. I can never do that second thing. Yeah. I have to just be there totally. Just the noises of the woods are so amazing. And I know as I get older, Rick has a little issue hearing. And I think, oh, I'm going to miss that so much. I know eventually I probably won't be able to hear all that well either. And I will really miss that sense because I want to experience the total of what I'm in the midst of. So if you like walking and you're not necessarily if you like being in the outdoors, there's so many other ways to do that, right? To biking. I'm not a mountain biker anymore. I used to be, but there's some great like back roads for biking up 138 too. I mean, some really fun stuff that is not on the trails necessarily, but just the back, those logging roads, I mean, are pretty fun. There's a lot going on. I remember, probably a year ago or so, we were riding up there and there was three of us and we both went past this area and we're like, God, that smells like something's really dead here. What is that? We're like, what is that? And it turned, and or not, it smelled like urine, I guess, not dead, but urine. And it turned out that there are some places that the elk go and they all pee in the same area. And I may have that wrong, but I think that after much discussion, I think that's what we came up with. And then a little while later, we're riding by and we're smelling skunk, right? And we're thinking, well, that could be marijuana because marijuana can smell like skunk, or it could be a dead skunk, or there's a skunk around. And it was skunk. Is it skunk weed? I think there's a skunk.
There is something, something like
oh my God, it actually smells like skunk. We found it and it actually smelled like skunk. So there's just so much to experience, even if you're not a walker. One other thing is join a walk. I mean, there's I have done the migrant trail down in Arizona probably three times, at least partially three times. I've done it twice completely and once, I guess, just part of the way because we didn't have time to do the whole one. You know, I mean, oh my God, that was magic. You would see the water bottles that had been left. You could see, you know, you would come across clothing. You would come across graves. It was a very emotional, emotional walk. But it wasn't really a hike. It was more of a walk. You know, you walk till it was too hot to walk, and then you camped, more or less. And that was to commemorate, of course, the migrants that had died in the desert on their way trying to find a better life. And there's all kinds of those things you can do too, all across the United States, I'm sure, with a group. If you're uncomfortable in the woods for some reason, by yourself or with just one other person or two other people, because a lot of people are afraid of nature, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of people haven't had a lot of experience hiking or spent a significant amount of time in nature. growing up, I really got to know the area around my grandparents' home, and I felt comfortable there because I was familiar with that space. But even now, I'm a little hesitant to explore the woods anywhere else on my own. We tend to be nervous about the things that we haven't been exposed to. So yeah, I think starting small, knowing the area you're going to be hiking in, like you said, preparing for what you'll likely encounter can go a long way. Know yourself. I know I tend to drink more water than most people, and know where you're going and pack accordingly.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. Maybe we'll be able to go hiking at some point in the future.
KQUA is a radio station run and maintained by Umpqua Watersheds as an outreach platform to share information for the betterment of our community. Living Downstream is our newest show and will include information and feature interviews on a variety of topics relating to the environment. It was named Living Downstream for two reasons. First, we are all connected by the river, and every one of us needs clean water to survive. Second, the actions we take here today impact others downstream tomorrow, just as we are impacted by those who live upstream from us. Both literally and figuratively, we're all living downstream from the actions of those who went before us. Likewise, future generations live downstream from us. Umpqua Watersheds wants to ensure that the world all our children inherit is a healthy, vibrant, and diverse one. To give a little background on our organization, Umpqua Watersheds reorganized in 1995 after a group of eco-minded friends observed an increase in devastating clear cuts of forests and realized the need for a local group to hold the Forest Service and timber industry accountable for their actions. There was, and still is, a need for public oversight of groups whose actions impact all of us and the larger ecosystems we're a part of. And Umpqua Watersheds strives to ensure that the timber industry and others are abiding by the laws in place to protect our water, our land, and our futures, and utilizing the best science available so that all practices done are sustainable for generations to come. The organization was brought to the national stage when it was discovered that some of the most egregious offenses against the Endangered Species Act were occurring right in our backyard with destruction of spotted owl habitat. What really helped Umpqua Watersheds get its start, and one aspect that still propels the organization today, is the importance of old growth or ancient forests and the complex, interconnected, and biodiverse webs of life they contain. Umpqua Watersheds has gone from nonviolent civil disobedience in an effort to protect these precious ecosystems to now also engaging local youths in the importance of the natural world. Not as just natural resources for humans to use as we wish and use up, or ecosystem services such as carbon sequestration, nutrient cycling, water purification, and more, which benefit us, but as a complex system containing non-human experience and knowledge that has survived significant events and times yet still endures, but is being destroyed by human hands. There is so much we still don't understand. Would we eliminate that which could teach us? What folly it would be for the student to silence the wise professor simply because his experience differs from hers, or he only wants to take advantage of her for selfish reasons. She, like Mother Earth, has intrinsic value and worth, her own aims and goals not always aligned with those of her student or of mankind. We are quick to tell young people to honor and respect their parents, while dishonoring and disrespecting the mother that still supports and nourishes all of us, and will continue to do so if we let her. What some people misunderstand is that Umpqua Watersheds isn't radically opposing all use or extraction of materials. The Earth does have resources which we need to survive, but no one can argue the fact that clear-cut logging is a harmful practice which is unsustainable and detrimental for all species. Our organization calls for people to do things above board, in compliance with the law, and in a way that is good for the health of us all and the environment. Don't you want clean water to drink and clean air to breathe? Don't you want your children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren to have the opportunity to experience the peaceful tranquility of the natural forest, to hear the birds, to smell the flowers? Yes, nature has a level of resilience, but there's a limit to what nature can bounce back from, and humans are making it so that numerous species with which we share this planet are unable to survive. When you try to simplify something that is complex,
when you say, oh, trees are renewable because they grow back, you're fudging the math. If you cut down an old growth forest with 300 or 500 year old trees, you're not going to get that back in a few years, or even 20 or 50 years. We're harvesting at a rate that can't be maintained, and replacing a complex, biodiverse forest with a stand of replanted, uniformly aged, single species is not an equivalent exchange. The Umpqua Basin is so vital in terms of both carbon sequestration and biodiversity, we all have a responsibility to protect it. In addition to protecting natural wild places so that there's a bright, healthy future for us all, Umpqua Watersheds has expanded its focus to also include education. High-quality education can help our young people be successful throughout their lives, and engaging in STEM, hands-on, real-world integration and application of the subjects science, technology, engineering, and math, provides youths with an opportunity to brainstorm creative and effective solutions to problems. Over the past several years, AmeriCorps members have assisted Umpqua Watersheds in its education and outreach efforts by leading various programs for local youths and supporting local teachers in their implementation of science curriculum. I apologize for any sound quality issues encountered during the show. These were the first two interviews that I conducted. The first, muffled because of masks. We tried to do the interviews in a socially distanced way, but in person. The second, the first one I conducted via Zoom. I'll be working to improve the sound quality and mastering the software equipment for future shows. Thank you for listening to our first episode of Living Downstream. We're so grateful to be a part of your week. If you have ideas for future topics for the show, let me know by emailing ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Again, that's ryan@umpquawatersheds.org. Join us next week to hear from other local experts about another environmental topic related to Southern Oregon. The intro and outro music for this show are excerpts from the song Forest by Vlad Gluchenko, used under the Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license. You can find more information about this song in Living Downstream's information section.